أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم مصطفى محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين سيما بقية الله في الأرضين ولعن الله أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. In our series of lectures, this is probably going to be the last point that we are going to be discussing, a lesson that we will try to draw from the life of Imam Hussein. And I think it would be a very good way to end this series, as the tomorrow's lecture is going to be focusing on the tragedy that befell on Imam Hussein on the day of Ashura, and more than likely the conversation regarding the lessons are going to be either slim to none. Mostly it's going to be covering the musiba of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein and his holy family. But going forward with the mindset that this could probably be the last session, one of the lessons that we draw from the life of Imam Hussein, from the revolution of Imam Hussein, is a trait that has been used by the arrogant powers, has been used by the enemies of Islam, has been used by those who propagate secularism, who propagate the anti-religion forces, basically. And that term and that trait is of independence. Independence is something which is which has been used both by the religious circles as a part of their doctrine and those who do not believe in religion, who like to label themselves as secular, who like to have no involvement of religion in their social affairs and their political affairs. Altogether, independence is something which is liked, which is wanted by all mankind, regardless of race, religion, culture, geographical boundaries, regardless of the eras that human beings have lived in. So independence was something that was wanted thousands of years ago. Independence is something that people want right now, and independence is something that people would always strive for. Independence is something which is, or the likeness, or a person wanting to be independent is something which is not taught. It is innate in mankind. So everybody wants it. It is not taught. It is not one of those things that you would go to school and learn about the significance of being an independent individual. And the fourth characteristic of independence is, it is something, the desire of independence never goes away. It might sleep for a little bit. It might sleep due to the circumstances, but it is definitely something that will never fade away completely. When we define these four characteristics of independence, it is safe to say that independence is one of those fitri attributes. Fitri attributes mean they are innate. It was already built in our system by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And hence, you see this term being misused by anti-religion forces to propagate their own worldview in order to propagate their own selfish interests, and in order to undermine the religion. How do they do that? They do that by giving wrong definition of independence, giving misconception about this term independence, this phenomenon called independence, by misinforming the masses about how religion blocks the way of independence. And in this session, we will see that how it was the sense of independence that made the followers of Imam the true Shia, and how independence was taught by Imam Hussein. As mentioned, that independence is innate, and hence it is propagated by the anti-religion forces against religion. How is it possible that if we are saying innate is something that is that exists in every mankind, why is it that some people might have the definition of independence as something as for example doing whatever you want, which means being enslaved by your carnal desires, or for some it is to follow the commands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and become independent like that? Those are two contrasting statements, but the followers of each school of thought, they label it as independence. Now, those who are the anti-religion forces, first let's talk about them. They have been using independence interchangeably with freedom, and freedom the way they define it. Now, it is quite possible that there is a phenomenon that is liked by everyone, all mankind, but the understanding of the phenomenon is different from one person to another. For example, you would not find anyone in the world who would say that he does not like beauty. You would not find anyone in the world who would say that he does not like justice, which means that it is built in our system. These things are innate. But the definition of someone who does not really understand the phenomenon of beauty will see the beauty in the materialistic things. He will say having a big mansion, having an expensive car, or having all kinds of luxuries available at his disposal, he will label that as beauty. But for someone who truly understands, who have understood the concept of beauty, what beauty really is, for him, annihilating his soul and his desires for the sake of his creator would be beauty. Now, who is right amongst the two polar opposite definitions? The existence that created the phenomenon of beauty will tell us which one is the right definition. Because if we fall in the discussion of relativism, we will never be able to reach any conclusion. Relativism says that
you know, whatever you say is right, whatever he says is right, like everyone is right in their own sense, in their own ways. Well, if everyone is right in their own ways, one of the theories is this particular theory of relativism is wrong, which means that it is a self-refuting theory. The theory of relativism has issues with it. So if you're saying everyone, this theory is, theory A is right and theory B is right as well, theory C is right, and I'm no one to say to anyone who is more right, and all the theories that are out there are right in their own ways, then amongst all those theories, one of the theory is this particular theory of saying that all theories are right is a wrong theory. So if this theory is right, then the followers of relativism fall in this trap. When we are talking about the concept, we have to have someone, like we have to have a concrete evidence to fall back on. What is really the definition of beauty? But to take our discussion forward, beauty is a concept that is liked, beauty is a phenomena that is liked by all mankind, and it has always been there and will always be there. So is justice, and hence so is independence. Now, beauty might be propagated by those who are enslaved to their carnal desires as propagating the materialistic things. They might propagate that whatever, whenever you are following your carnal desires, whenever you are enslaving yourself to carnal desires, that's when you are really enjoying the beauty. But that is not the case. Similarly, when you see justice, when you see the difference, you would not find any oppressor carrying out his oppression in the name of oppression itself. They would never do that because they are always going to use the phenomenon of justice. When you are enslaving people, when you are lynching another race, when you are treating other races as second class, third class citizens, when you have inequality at the institutional level, you will say that it is for the sake of justice. It is much to my surprise when you look back in history, not too long ago, you will find people were being enslaved. People's lands were being looted under the pretext of justice. Then mankind progressed and said that, no, this is not justice. And they moved forward by saying that, okay, no one is going to be slave, but different races are going to be treated differently. Then again, it was being done in the name of justice, not in the name of inequality. Moving on forward, when the most needy people are being deprived of the basic necessities, such as medicine, such as water, such as food, that is also being done in the name of justice. So, justice is a phenomenon that has been used by the oppressors to propagate their agenda. Similarly, independence is a phenomenon that has been used by the forces against independence for their own good. people have been confused, and they have been made confused by having them see just the part of what independence is really like. One of the factors of independence, one of the small factors of independence is freedom. Freedom does not mean independence. You can still be dependent on the freedom that is being granted to you. If I'm able to relay my message across, you can still be dependent. You can still be slave. You can still be slave, but your freedom, you are given certain freedoms and you're not given certain freedoms. When you're given certain freedoms, you are still being at the mercy of those who you are dependent upon. You look at any society in the world, when they talk about freedom, that you have freedom to do this, you have freedom to do that. If the authority is giving you freedom, that means that you are dependent on that authority to exercise the rights that they will allow you to exercise. So at the end of the day, you're still, like it or not, the fact of the matter is you are dependent on someone, something, some entity, or some existence. Now, when we have said this thing clear, that at the end of the day, the freedom that you are getting is from the existence, from the entity, from the institution that is granting you that, it means that you are dependent on their mercy to grant you whatever freedom that they want. Even, for example, in a utopian society, you are given the freedom to do anything that you want. Anything that you want. If one comes and says that I want to get rid of the authority that has granted me the freedom to do anything that I want, would he be able to do so? Of course not. Of course not. That's a problem with, again, relativism. So freedom, giving freedom, which is one of the aspects of independence, granting freedom to someone translates to the person who's receiving the freedom is dependent upon the entity that is giving him the freedom. So independence does not equate to freedom. Freedom is one of the aspects of independence. So you can, for the most part, when you are enjoying any freedom in any society, you're still being dependent. What does Imam Hussein want us to be? Independent. How can we be independent? This was from the secular point of view, from religious point of view. You can be independent. As we have already said, before I say this, as we have already laid our ground, that we are going to be dependent on someone or something. Now here's the choice. Who do you want to be dependent on? Who do I want to be dependent on? Whoever I'm going to be dependent upon, they are the ones who are going to grant me the rights and the freedom. And I'm going to be their slave. I'm going to be their follower. And I'm going to be at their at the disposal of their mercy. If I really have a choice to think that who I want to be dependent upon, and hence, because of that dependency, I may become independent. And that existence is of no one else But the only real existence that exists, that's out there, and that's the existence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the source of all the dependency, the source of all the freedom, the source of all the rights. The only existence, the only obligatory existence that is out there. Everything else is a potential existence, possible existence. The definition of possible existence is the existence that is in need of another, of something to come into an existence, to be out there. Whereas independent existence, the only independent existence that's out there, is the existence that does not need anything, anyone to be there. He was there, he shall always be there. That existence is of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So when I connect myself to the only independence, or to the only independent existence, to the source of independence, that is when I will be depending upon the only existence, the only independent existence, and hence I will end up becoming an independent in the mortal world. This is how you're going to become independent, when you are completely submitted, when you have completely humbled yourself in the presence of the only independence, independent existence out there. The only independent existence will make you independent. Once you become independent, you have started to become Ashurai. You have started to become Husseini. How? On the night of Ashura, when, again, this is an example that has been stated before, when the candles were lit off, when the candles were dimmed, the companions were asked, were given the option of either being with Imam Hussein, and the consequence of staying with Imam Hussein was already mentioned to them, that tomorrow you will embrace martyrdom for sure if you stay. So if you want to leave, you might as well leave. The companions of Imam Hussein chose to be independent, did not give in front of anything, whether death, even if I may dare to say, the hereafter, the Jannah, because they were guaranteed heavens for supporting Imam Hussein until that point. They did not even give in front of Jannah. They did not give in front of the death, and hence they became larger than life. When you become independent, Allah is what? Hayy, ever living. You are able to dodge death. You are able to become independent from the fear of death, from the love of the world. That's when you become independent. And when you become independent, you definitely become larger than life. You become immortal. And that's why we have in Quran about shuhada, about the martyrs. وَلَا تَقُولُ لِمَنْ يُقْتَلُ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أَمْوَاتًا بَلْ أَحْيَاءٌ وَلَكِنْ لَا تَشْعُرُونَ That don't think those who are killed in the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, they're dead, but yet they're alive. But you know not. لَا يَحْسَبَنَ الَّذِينَ قُتِلُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أَمْوَاتًا بَلْ أَحْيَاهُنْ عِنْدَ رَبِّهُمْ يُرْزَقُونَ Do not think of those who have been killed, who have been slain in the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as dead. They are getting their sustenance from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in front of their Lord. From their Lord. You become independent. That you have no dependency whatsoever makes you fearless. Now, you don't have to be a religious person in order to understand that independence is a good thing. And that's why the psychologists, you talk about human sciences, they all say the same thing. When you read philosophy and the just ruler and the just king, all these concepts, how can you be just if you're dependent on someone? You don't have to be a religious person in order to understand independence is a good thing. And that's why I said that the forces that are anti-religion, they have used this in order to deceive people. Independence bring what? One of the things that independence bring is izzah that we have already spoken about. At the end of the day, know this, that dependency on anything other than Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will never gain you independence. And when you are dependent on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then you do what? You do everything which your Lord tells you, because you're only dependent on Him. And when you do everything that Lord tells you, what does that result in? That results in you reaching the goal of your creation. Because the Lord will not tell you anything which will not take you towards the level of perfection and towards the level of completion. And when you get to the level of completion, you become what? You become vicegerent of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You become khalifa. Inni ja'alu fil ardi khalifa. Khalifa means that you are going to be doing everything, you're right behind the one who preceded you. You're right behind them. Means you're following their footsteps. Means you become independent. Why? Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is independent. We, each and every one of you, each and every one of us, are Khalifatullah. We are supposed to be, we should have been the vicegerent of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Who stopped us? Our dependencies on other than Allah. The dependencies at times are with the worldly things. At times, they might not look like worldly things. They might look like those are the divine paths, but the root of it is dunya, the world. There are certain steps
that I will quickly go over, and each one can be talked and elaborated in great details, and it, as it has been elaborated by some of the great scholars. Number one state, the stage number one, there are 7 stages to get to the league of being independent. First stage is tafakkur. If you are trying to embark on the journey of independence, the first and foremost thing that you have to do is to think, contemplate, ponder. This is the reason. It is the first stage and by far one of the most important stages. There is a reason why we have in narrations that one moment of contemplation was more than the worship of 70 years. Contemplation. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Quran, multiple places, has invited us to ponder. لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَفَكَّرُونَ It has always invited people to think, to ponder. Ponder over what? What do we want to think about? While we are contemplating, first thing, before you get towards the destination of independence, first thing is you jot down things that you know for sure you're dependent upon. When I go to work, am I dependent upon my boss or Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for sustenance? When I study hard and when I'm giving my exams, am I dependent upon the hard work that I've done? Or I'm dependent on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Which does not mean, by the way, that you don't work hard and say that I'm only dependent on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. No, you do your due diligence, you do everything that you're supposed to, but still depend upon Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Completely, completely. Not even an ounce of your hard work should be considered as the depending factor. You are doing your due diligence, you are supposed to do that. But whether or not you'll be successful, you're only depending on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Thinking that naturally, understanding the fact that we love independence, this is something which is a good thing, regardless of religion. Thinking about how the word independence has been used to make you dependent on things. How the materialism and consumerism has been used to make you attached with those things. How the branding has been used for you to be dependent and attached with other than Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. How the concept of family has been used and propagated to make you attached with the family.
for non-divine reasons? Am I loving my parent because they're my parents? Or am I loving my parents because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has commanded me so? Am I being nice when I'm working in a customer-oriented, client-oriented environment? I'm asking people how you're doing and how's your day been? Is it because this is what I'm supposed to do at work? Or is it because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in Quran, قُلُ لِلنَّاسِ أَحْسَانًا, talk, be nice with people. Is it because Allah, my imams have taught me to be generous with people? Am I being generous because of that, or because I want to get some tax cut? So while we are at the first stage, you think, you contemplate, you ponder, and you ponder your about your dependencies. How do you get rid of them? You cannot find the remedy of the disease that you're afflicted with unless and until you acknowledge that the disease exists in you. You are afflicted with a disease. The one of the best things that one can do to themselves, one of the best things that I can do to myself, you can do to yourself, is to acknowledge the disease that we have, which is dependency on other than Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Once you acknowledge the disease, you'll be able to find the remedy for it. The second stage after contemplating, after jotting things down of your dependency, you start severing your attachments, you start cutting your attachments with anything which is other than Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We talk about the martyrs, we talk about the Shuhada'i Karbala. I don't know what was the secret of Hur. Like, how was he able to change his fate forever in the matter of few hours? Of course, there are assumptions. I think, again, to humble understanding, which stands there, not too much authenticity to it. But, you know, while you're thinking, contemplating, he must have broken the shackles of the love of the world. And you can do it in an instant, or at times you are able to travel. You're able to travel thousands of years spiritually in the matter of one night, in the matter of one moment, making that right choice. And Hur ibn Yazid al-Rihai, he was able to free himself from the shackles of the love of the world, from the shackles of anything and everything that was non-divine. And hence, he changed himself, who could have been Hur la'natullah to Hur alayhi salam, just by becoming independent from the worldly shackles. So, cutting off the attachments is the second stage. When you have, after contemplating, you have jotted things down, slowly and steadily, start cutting things off. Third is your will and your resolution. And again, I'm just quoting
the scholars, as it is far from my domain to even talk about what will entails and what resolution entails. But it has been written in many akhlaq books that one of the key things is to have consistency if you're trying to gain proximity of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Do little, but be consistent. Do little, but be consistent. You're not consistent. You might want to do a lot of good things, but due to laziness, due to not being able to cut yourself off from the attachments, you might not be able to achieve the results. And hence it is recommended to start slow, but be consistent. If you have decided that out of 10 things, I'm not going to do one thing, be consistent with that. Rather than saying that I'm going to leave all 10 things, and you leave those 10 things for 2 days, but on the third day you're doing all of them all over again. Fourth stage is maintaining the speed of the journey. Again, this is goes back to the concept of consistency. How fast, if I was successful in getting rid of one of the attachments, then I should not be content that, oh, okay, at least I was able to cut off one of the attachments. Then you add some burden to it. You add some more. Keep testing your water. Keep increasing your tolerance level. Stage number 5 is an extremely important one. And that is falling in love. Falling in love. Feeling that real love. I only pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I wish that we are able to taste a sip, a mere drop of that ocean of love, of that real love. We don't know. Those who are true lovers, they want to annihilate themselves. They want to annihilate, they want to trample upon their desires for the love of the beloved. And unless love is involved, unless you are completely drowned in love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the path towards independence will always be incomplete. It's one of the requirements. One of the requirements to be independent, that you have to be in love with the real existence. What is the protocol of being in love? When you're really in love with someone, you want to do things that are of their, that your beloved is fond of. You want to prepare yourself in a way that your beloved would want to see you. You want to do things that would please your beloved. You're in love with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. How is it that we fail to follow His commands, to obey His commands? How is it that we are at times willingly, while knowing that Allah is watching, doing things that would displease Him? Sixth stage is when you have passed the stage of being in love, you get wisdom. You get wisdom, you get insight. Insight is part of wisdom. Izzah is part of wisdom. So you get those things as a domino effect. And last, which is a result of being independent, that you have influence over, you have influence over the universe. You make things happen. Imam Hussein, one of the things that was told, that was that Imam Hussein, while addressing to the army of Yazid, of Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, said, if you don't want to be a religious person, at least be independent, be free. Imam was trying to make them realize and was trying to make them get to the level or to understand the goal of their creation. Again, talking about that particular event that took place on the night of Ashura, it's really important we understand that what these companions did was the true manifestation of independence. Imam had lifted his oath, but they chose to stay with Abu Abdullah al-Hussein because of their independence, because of the nature of independence that they had in them, that feel of independence that they had, how they had removed all the obstacles that one has in the way of independence. And Imam wanted independent companions. If Imam Hussein wanted independent companions, why would Imam of the time not want independent companions? Are we able to say that we are independent from the worldly attachments, from things, from the obstacles that are in the way of independence? Are we free from them? Aswa, or the 9th of Muharram, in a lot of places is attributed to Mawla Ali Akbar. Mawla Ali Akbar, Imam Hussein's son, young son, who resembled Prophet so much, not only physically but also in his attributes, in his akhlaq. And the love of Imam Hussein towards Prophet. Love of Imam Hussein towards Prophet does not need any introduction. Hussein minni wa ana min al-Hussein. It's hard enough
It's hard enough to let your child, to let your young son go in the mouth of death. How much harder it would have been for Imam Hussein to send someone who reminded him of his beloved grandfather. Imam Hussein was truly tested in every sense of word, and what a blessing that we have of his sacrifice. It's a strange phenomenon. We read in Ziyarat al-Ashura, Allahumma lakal hamdu hamda shakirin laka ala usabihin. That we are thanking Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for what? For the greatest tragedy that had afflicted on people of earth and people of heaven. La yawma ka yawma ya Abu Abdullah. No day is like yours, O Abu Abdullah. It has been severe on the inhabitants of heavens and the inhabitants of earth. We've known that one of the instances on the day of Ashura, when Imam Hussein did not stop or resist when a mujahid came to get the permission of the battle. And that was at the time of when Mawla Ali Akbar had come and asked him for the permission. Imam Hussein knew what was the permission for, but he did not hesitate even for a moment in granting him the permission. This is the independent soul. Independent from the love of the children when compared with the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. How hard it must have been for Imam Abdullah Hussein to see his thirsty son fight like a lion. Must have reminded him of Amirul Mu'mineen. Must have reminded him of his brother. As a father, how proud you feel on the achievement and accomplishments of your children. Especially when you know that your children is doing something for the sake of Allah, for the sake of Islam. You feel proud, you feel strengthened, you feel strong. You thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for giving your children on the right path, for giving this insight to your children to be able to do something for Islam. One of the scholars had mentioned that if you ever want to find the value, the significance of Islam, just this fact is good enough to tell you how much does it worth that a father like Hussein sacrifices his son like Ali Akbar for the sake of Islam. How hard it must have been for Abu Abdullah to get on the side of his son's bruised body, wounded body. Body that was... that was... that had received numerous blows. That had received so many blows, as we know, as we have read, that when Maulana Ali Akbar got injured, his horse could not figure out which camp to go, as his eyes were covered in blood. So rather than going towards the camp of Abdullah, the horse started running towards the camp of the enemies. And Maulana Ali Akbar, in the midst of all the swords and despair, with what energy Imam Hussain must have rushed towards the body of Ali Akbar. Those few steps from his camp to the dead body of Ali Akbar, how long they must have felt. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala curse those who inflicted so much atrocity on the innocent, on the holy family of Prophet. May Allah continue His chastisement on them in the Yawm al Qiyamah. اللهم لعن أول ظالم الظلم حق محمد وآل محمد وآخر الطاب له على ذلك. اللهم لعن الإصابة التي جاهدت الحسين الشايعة وبايعة وتابعة على قتله. اللهم لعنهم جميعا. بالله send his chastisement on their followers who are following the footsteps of the killers of Imam Hussein. May Allah hasten the reappearance of our beloved Imam. May Allah help us become independent before his arrival, before his reappearance. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala protect the mu'mineen, protect the believers, protect the holy sites, holy sanctities, holy shrines, holy Kaaba. Free holy Kaaba from the transgressors. May Allah protect and prolong the life of Imam's deputy, Imam Khamidai. May Allah protect all the revered scholars, including and especially Sayyid Ali Sistani. May Allah protect. May Allah protect the leader of the believers in Nigeria, Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki, from the evils of that oppressive government. May Allah help us get ready for the sake of Imam. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.